This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
Hello, welcome back, everybody, to another year of the Sunday Podcast.
I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Back in 2025 for our 5th season. You can expect more of this.
He's claiming that he was ill before the semifinal, whatever. But, you know, I just feel like at that point he was just looking for attention.
And some of this.
And you normally say no human is limited. So I can't limit myself, or I can't just say I can do.
As well as event coverage around all the major races on the UK circuit.
And if you're a fan of the pod, please give us a rating and review on your preferred podcast streaming service.
And if you want to stay up to date with all the latest news, give us a follow on Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
As always, thanks for listening. See you next time. And we hope you enjoyed the episode.
Welcome back to another episode brought to you by sportsshoes.com. As always, apologies for the slight delay, but we wanted to wait till after the action at the World Indoors in Nanjing had concluded, and some great races to chat about over the past few days. Seems a while ago that 3K was, mate, but obviously we'll get into that as well.
Yeah, I mean, just initially as well, those 2:15s today were very interesting. I mean, again, we got to start with Jakob. He obviously gets his double. He steps up, takes that silver. I mean, we said after Euros, Gordy looked like he could have definitely got a medal and actually challenged far more than he did at Euros. He got pushed around a bit in that final. He got a much better run today. But I just look at that men's 1500, I mean, indoors as well. By the way, Hauser really, really impressed me. His kick in the heats was flipping ridiculous. I think he ran 5 points for the last 200. Obviously, like Nate Green of Washington as well has been doing that in the NCAA. He's been doing a good job there. So, like, Hauser, what I was going to say basically was, I think if this is on an outdoor track, and some people might just think it's just absolute nonsense, but if it's an outdoor track, I think Jakob gets challenged so much more. It's so difficult. Basically, what happens, he finds himself at the front at the right time. And that's credit to Jakob, right? His positioning and everything he does to get at the front. But it's just chaos behind him. It always is. Like, I just, again, I look at, you know, Gawley did well to get second. He finally got on the inside, and he even mentioned after how he was kind of like, I'm just going to track Jakob. And that's what he did. But then you look at people like Hauser and Nadir again, and they're just fighting so much more for positions, and they're trying to constantly overtake each other and battle. It was the same in the 3000, I thought. There was a key point in that 3000 where all the guys further back, you know, your Aragaris, your Maharis, your Ethiopians and stuff, and they're just battling all over the place. And Jakob's obviously at that moment in time, he's up at the front and he's avoiding all of this. And so it's credit to him, he gets up at the front, but he is vulnerable. He is very vulnerable. I looked at that 1500 today and I said, okay, well, Gawley is a guy who is coming back to his very best, but I still don't think he's anywhere near his best. Jakob is the world record holder, but for me, he still looks vulnerable over 1500. And I look at like Hauser as well, and this is a good guy. I think he's going to have an epic summer, but, you know, I think there's people, Kessler, Ocker, you know, Neguse, like that, Kerr. There's a lot of people who I think would have done Jakob over in that 1500. That might be stupid of me to say. I think he did look vulnerable. And in the 3000, similar, you know, he's kicking away from Aragawi. Aragawi's an amazing athlete, but he has not got the kick. And again, like, you've got to, it's about winning the race and everything that goes before it as well. And that's why Jakob's just so good. So you've got to give hats off to him. But indoors, it's definitely a lot easier to kind of get, once he's at the front, to stay there than it is outdoors. He's going to come under some serious challenges outdoors. So all I'm saying is I didn't see anything from this indoors, you know, Jakob winning both the Europeans and the Worlds that suggests that his kicks got better.
I think you're bang on, mate. I think that's absolutely fair to say. I think, look, like you say, hats off to him, mate. He's run brilliantly. He's done the job this indoor season. But yeah, I don't think we can read anything more than it was. And all those races were ones he really should be winning. Like, have we seen, like, Gourley's great, but have we seen Gourley beat him today? That'd have been a massive shock, massive upset. I was surprised to see how close he got. And I think fair play to Gourley, like you said, mate, his interview afterwards was great, how he kind of went through, I guess, deciding to race for silver, like post-Europeans. He was like, I'm going to race for, essentially admitted that he was going to race for silver. He was going to track Jakob. That meant he was never going to be able to get round Jakob, but it meant that he was always going to move away because you know Jakob's going to be at the front of that field. So he did a great job positioning himself today. So that silver medal for him was great. But yeah, you're right, mate. Aragawi made it a great, great race, that 3K. I think that was probably, for me, the race of the champs. But when you throw in a few more guys and it's like, okay, so then in the 5K, you probably lose to Aragawi if you're Jakob that day. And yeah, that's concerning for him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And on the 1500, just, you know, when you go back to his kick as well, Gourley had a faster last 200. I know, like, it just doesn't matter because Gourley didn't win. But, you know, Jakob's running fast. He's running 13 mids, you know, 13.4 and stuff for his last couple hundreds in that race. What was fascinating, by the way, Jakob's first 100 meters, 17.3. it is funny watching him go off and just completely jog off the line and then get into the race. You think a lot of other people in that field were 15 point, 16 point through that first 100. But again, I just wanted to highlight that sort of to give a little bit of stats as well to sort of back up what we're talking about here. You know, there were people in that race who, you know, caught both Gourley and Hauser. I think their last 200 was ever so slightly quicker than Jakob's, but hey, he wins the race. So we don't want to talk about times. But yeah, I think in the 3000, I don't know why, we should be loving Jakob anyway. Like, I think for the sport, it is much better that someone like Jakob is winning these races because he is turning up. He's a super high profile figure. So it is amazing. But we always just love to see a battle and a bit more and an upset and stuff, I guess. But, you know, he's the absolute Don. He's dominant. And I've got a lot of time for him. But I think people could beat him if they were smarter. And again, that 3000, why don't the Ethiopians just go like, right, all we got to do is just block him in, hold him off. Like when our guy was at the front, he was the only one there. But there was a key point in that 3000. I think it was 600s ago. Jakob was completely boxed on the inside. Mm. And, you know, he had Ethiopians in front of him. And I'm just trying to think who else. I think even like people like Kosgrim were there. The Americans, like it was, I'm trying to remember who else is in that final. He was completely boxed. He was completely boxed. But the problem was everyone started to surge. Everyone wanted to go to the front. Everyone wanted to cover moves. And when everyone's fighting and surging for positions, the race then just opened up and Jakob goes, okay, right, now's my time. He picks his moments so, so well. He's so alert to when the race is breaking up. But had they have not fought for position 600 out, had they have gone, right, we're going to leave this till the last 200 and just wait and wait and wait, Jakob would have been stuffed because there would have been way too many bodies to get round.
Yeah.
But hey, he's attacking.
That's the difference between like five guys teaming up against Jakob versus all trying to win the race themselves or medal themselves. And
I think
in athletics, you're never going to get that. That's never going to be the outcome. You're never going to have people like putting team tactics against someone like that.
Yeah, I mean, how good is he? The fact that we're saying he could have lost that race if
five guys tagged up again.
If five guys decided they were going to beat him and they were all going to sacrifice themselves by one. Like, I mean, that's how good he is. And the nice thing about the sport, I guess, is that doesn't happen. It's still every man for himself, no matter what country you're from. But yeah, it was people like, I guess, Kai Robinson, Sam Gilman, super running. Those of you who don't know Sam Gilman, he's done a lot of training with Grant Fisher as well. So clearly he's in incredible shape. And Dylan Jacobs, both of those running well. Kai Robinson. So yeah, OAC America having a good day with Robinson and Jacobs. But yeah, I mean, that is how good he is. The fact that it would take four or five guys to really kind of mess him about. Yeah.
It would. But then, like you mentioned, when it comes to outdoors, there is going to be four or five guys and maybe they were not working together, but they're all going to have their own game plans.
Yeah, but this is it. But I think this is where outdoors is a little bit easier. So you think when, you know, Whiteman won in 22, won in 23, even kind of Hocker to some degree, although the Olympic final was a little different. Hocker was quite a bit further back, especially Whiteman and Kerr. They were on Jakob the whole way. Like they were uninterrupted. They were in second for the last sort of 600-700 meters of the race, and then they were able to kind of strike and make their move. Whereas it's when they're in second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth, and they're all just fighting for that second spot, is when they all kind of they lose there and then because they're fighting.
We even saw it last year. Like if you're
fighting to get on the shoulder,
about that Jakob Vikør, and that's how Hocker won.
Yeah. These guys are fighting to get on Jakob's shoulder, and they blow their own race because of it. Because it's just so deep. So it was terrific, mate. It was good racing, though, and it was fun to watch. But yeah, I think summary for me is nothing to suggest his kicks. You know, he's amazing at winding up, but I still can't see a 25 last 200 in this guy. Whereas you've seen that. Saw it in Hauser in the heat. I know it was a heat. It was a different race. And we've seen it with guys in the NCA, like Fippin, Ethan Strand, Nate Green. Like, I know they're not running anywhere near as fast as Jakob, so it's stupid to compare. But they can't do it. And, you know, I'd love to know his form.
What's interesting, though, is that we talk about the summer and how these guys are going to be challenging him. And don't get me wrong, I think they will. But have we seen them all in there today? Would they have really been challenging? That's the question I ask. Because Jakob's not going to be...
Oh, cool.
As fit as he's going to be in the summer. Like, it's March, and that's why they're choosing not to be there. Because if they could have gone there and won today, then I think they would. But they're thinking, oh, the summer's more important, and they're changing their training for that. Do you see what I'm saying? So,
I think from what I've seen from Grant Fisher, I think he would give Jakob a very, very good run for his money in that 3,000. I think he would... Same with Cole Hocker. Cole Hocker in the 1,500 today, I think he could have beaten Jakob. But, you know, it is a shame. And Jakob's standing there and he's saying, hey, look, you know, why didn't these guys come and race me? Like, it is a shame. It's a shame that, you know, world title doesn't appeal to most. We know why. Obviously, a lot of these guys have Grand Slam to worry about, and that's over in the States. And I just think you're always going to get that kind of divide, aren't you, with Americans, because the travel commitment is just so... I mean, hey, look at Gourley, right? He's going to have to go to Grand Slam. Well, he's off. He's got to go fly to Jamaica now, I think. You know, he's got, 2 weeks? So he's got to just keep the ball rolling, which is going to be difficult. But he does look like he's in a place where, you know, he wants to snowball and kind of keep racing. He obviously missed quite a large part of last year. And hey, look, Britain's first medal in that event in 32 years, apparently. David Strange, silver medal in 1993 against Marcus of Sutherland Islands. So, which is quite staggering when you think we haven't had a medal in that event in 32 years. So yeah, well done to Gourley. Mate, let's move on to the women's 3,000. Because
where do we start with that one, mate? So we start with Shelby. I've not seen too much come out about that.
No, I mean, everyone seems to be people obviously acknowledging that she got banned, but yeah, everyone seems to be okay with her competing. I guess they have no choice. No one's speaking out, and this is where, like, me and you always have that debate. If this was a Kenyan or an Ethiopian, and they just got silver in a world title, come back from a four year ban, I definitely think people would be speaking out. Obviously, it's Shelby Houlihan. Everyone seems to be her friend. Everyone seems to think, oh, how unlucky are you? But you know, no one else has ever had that problem before, so. Yeah.
Like, I think we said if that's Katir in a few years' time.
Right, this is what I mean. Yeah, Katir in a few years' time. When Gatlin came back, I feel like Gatlin's a bit more respected now. I mentioned the other day, you know, he's got a good podcast and, like, you know, generally.
That was years of him being back on the circuit. He was getting booed.
When him and Bolt faced off, like, he was a massive villain. Yeah, I mean, Houlihan's just slotted straight back in the sport. Seems like people are loving her and congratulating her. So there you go. But yeah, gets second, beats Jess Hull, beats Winnie Morgan, you know, Sarah Healy, all these girls. And what's frightening is Houlihan's only going to get better.
Well, I'm just like, how can you produce that performance after 4 years off? Obviously, you're allowed to train, but 4 years of no racing. That is ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know this question. I would love to ask someone who does. Don't know the answer, but like, how strict is the testing when you're serving a ban? Like, do you get tested every?
Yeah. You're not going to be an elite athlete, right? So you wouldn't be on the whereabouts testing, you'd imagine. Or are you?
You've not been
an elite athlete for 4 years.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, how often are you getting tested and stuff? Yeah.
Crazy.
You're right. You know, I look at it after 4 years, and that was a pretty strong field in the women's 3,000. And I think she's only going to get better, man. She is a racer at heart as well. The more she races, the better and better she's going to get. Like, you look at it, she's probably going to be the world champs in Tokyo. Even as strong as America are, I think a lot of Americans coming off that high of the Olympics last year and stuff. And I just think, yeah, we can expect Houlihan to, you know, it's September. It's still a long, long time away.
Yeah, she's got range, like, whether it be the 15, whether it be the 5, whether it be both, yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. So
she'll find her way into one of those teams.
Yep. Exactly. So, but hey, Haley won. Good race from her. And yeah, Sarah Healy, very, very strong as well. Sixth for Ireland. So kind of backing up and Jess Hole as well. So, yeah, was a good race. And again, slow wind up that we saw go down. And it was fun to see lots of positional changes, you know, everything like that. But where Haley was super impressive was dropping a 13.8 for her penultimate 100 split. I just thought, flipping hell, to have that sort of wheels to be able to go, you know, 13 point in your final 200 was, yeah, very, very impressive.
I think both are 3Ks for me. And maybe, I think it's just always the case. Like the race a bit longer, you throw a few more names in there. Like
indoors is perfect. Before,
the melting pot, isn't it? But yeah, I think both the 3Ks for me were just phenomenal in terms of racing. So.
Women's 1500. I mean, Segai is just like, I mean, talk about, you know, what Segai did was impressive. And you see Dagumba in the 8 just absolutely popping, but like that. But yeah, she just
that was like a high school 800 meters.
Yeah, she was, wasn't it? But Segai does hold it together. She has this horrible period in the middle, but she does lift it. You know, she really does. You know, she was back down on 15 point for the last 100. Like, she does lift it back up 30 point for the last lap. But 3:54 championship record, mightily impressive. Walter G as well. And look, Georgia Hunter-Bell did great. There was a large part of that race where she had to kind of really dial in and focus because she was leading that chase group. And I think, you know, this is where it just comes into experience. Like, she just knew her pace and her rhythm. And, you know, Georgia Griffith of Australia, I think, will low-key be kicking herself. She got after it. But had she sat back with Georgia Hunter-Bell, could she have maybe challenged for that bronze? I mean, as it was. As
tough
it was,
to say, because she still, yeah, still ran that Australian record, didn't she?
She did, yeah. She'll probably have no regrets.
Yeah. And I think, like, sometimes you just got to put yourself out there, because there were so many ladies in that race that did sit back and then obviously never got on it. I thought, yeah, Georgia Bell was super impressive the way she ran that, like really mature, the way she kind of made the decision to lead it, but like not go too crazy. She didn't panic to get back on the next group. When she did get on the next group, she sat there for a bit and then was like, okay, I'm gonna move past Griffith, like you said, and really kind of push it on. Yeah, I thought particularly after a couple of weeks ago, yeah, phenomenal run from her. And she obviously mentioned, like you said, around the pacing from training and stuff, that she really like just keys into what 4 minute pace feels like and understands how to run at that. And she also made the comment as well about how much she improved last year from indoor to outdoor. And she's run 4 seconds quicker this indoor season than she did last year as well. So she can go again. I'm sure that training is nicely lined up for her, obviously in that group. And she'll be ready to go come the summer.
Yeah, I think what's great for her, she's just got the blueprint, hasn't she? Like, she's done pretty much all very similar races to what she did last year. Like, Olympics was a bit earlier, but if she can just kind of, yeah, copy that, she's going to be fit. What is worth highlighting, though, the golfing class. I mean, Segai wins in 3:54. I mean, Susan Ajor and Sinclair Johnson, fifth and sixth, 4:03 and 4:04. 10 seconds between first and sixth. Like, and like, you know, Segai is a freak. But like, she's no more of a sort of freak than Jakob, like class wise.
Yeah.
And like, there's no way he's, you know, he's putting 10 seconds off fifth and or sixth in a 1500 final. And there's no way, you know, but Jesus. Yeah. The golfing class was.
It's the way she ran it, though, obviously is very different, because that's like Jakob going off a world record pace, because that's what she did. She went off.
Yeah. She blows the whole field when she goes off that quick.
Like right at the start. She went off a 3:45 pace.
Yeah, but they didn't go with her, mate. Like, you know.
No, I know, but you see what I'm saying? So then it just, the race is completely different. And like you said, we'll compare that to Jakob's 17-second first 100, and then you're never going to have that difference. I think both fields, though, if you look at it, like realistically, who in those fields, bar the top athletes or the athletes from like nations who don't have as much depth, who's actually making the world champs in Tokyo? They talk about those American ladies in there. They're not making the world champs. over 1500 meters come Tokyo.
Well, to be fair though, like Alfonso and stuff, like she was class of the Euros, you know, medalist, like they are.
McLean, yeah, the Euros McLean again, though.
World Cup, or Sinclair Johnson's world. So like they are, they probably are making the world final, but it's just, that is just the game at the moment. I think the difference in class, but I think there was a lot of depth there a lot of depth not there in a women's 1500.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Or they're doing the 3K.
Yeah, but like, you know, those Americans, you know, they are 356 runners, but yeah, I think it was fair to say they didn't turn up. So actually, they couldn't have been anywhere near their best, because like it was a time, if you were behind Georgia Hunter Bell in that race, it was a time trial and it was perfect for you to run fast. So hey, look, anyway, women's, you know, yeah, Bell does great, snatches the bronze, and then it's moved to those 800s. I mean, Josh Hui, he's the real deal. Great racer. I think we all saw that one coming. It was very much part of form, but Crestan almost pips him. But, you know, I think Hui won that more dominantly than the results suggest as well, because the kind of battle he had to have with Brandon Miller, which you kind of look at the way Crestan executed that race, it was kind of near perfect, didn't get involved in any, didn't really put a foot wrong, to be honest. And it almost paid off. You know, Hui just still has more there. So, I mean, to go 24 point in the first lap of an 800 indoors, it's...
Yeah, particularly when you're fighting someone, not like on a clear run over.
Yes. Yeah, so. And then the women's race was just even more
massacre.
Crazy.
It was an absolute massacre, that women's race. It was, I thought they would die more. Like, I thought more of them would be like Daguma was. I was surprised. I thought the one person who might be able to hold it together was Daguma, but I was surprised how many of them held it together like they did. As much as they slowed, Daguma was fully gone, full of lactic, and I thought that the whole field would be like that, apart from the three Europeans that we saw over in the European Champs a couple of weeks ago. They're the only three that kind of stayed off the back.
Well, yeah. Sekidizo is worth... She is going to be a force to be reckoned with this season, because to run 13.1 for your first 100 and not completely implode and kind of fall apart, I just thought, flipping hell, you know, 27.0 at 200. And like, that is, I guess, like, that. I don't know if she's ever done that before, but... They'll probably do something similar outdoors, right? Like to go through 400 in 56 is, I mean, wasn't it this last year, like Jenny and Trevor were saying, like Keely's never gone through in quicker than 57 before or something like that, 400. So it kind of shows you, like, and Sekidizo's gone 56. I mean, Kachu's gone 55.88 at 400. I mean, what? And Sekidizo's gone 56 do indoors and actually, you know, held it together. She didn't completely implode. Which I think is very impressive. She paces that much better, and she's, you know, she's running easily 157 odd, you know, 157 low. But Daguma, you want to know her last 100, mate?
I don't know. It looked like one of my races, to be honest. I did feel for her. I was like, wow, we've all been there.
20 seconds for her last 100. Yeah, 37 point last 200. So yeah, I mean, she's just... She switched off once she's once the field's gone by, hasn't she? That's rough. So bless her. We've all been there. I think, like you said, you can relate. I think many listening can probably relate to that one. But it was a good massacre. It was a good race. Yeah, and I think Audrey Vera as well is you know, European, Swedish, Swiss girl, someone to sort of keep an eye on, because yeah, it's still just 21 years of age. And looking like the national record, 159 indoors, she ran 158 outdoors. Like, yeah, it's looking like she's going to have another kind of big leap forward this summer.
Yeah, and mate, what I just liked, I think, particularly compared to the Europeans, all six of those finals, those distance finals at the Worlds, we had no processions.
Yeah.
Even the women's 1500, like, wasn't a procession, because there was stuff going on behind as well. There were still like moves being made. It wasn't just the whole field strung out and everyone. There was a race to watch, and we had a race to watch across six finals, and that's what you want to see. Like, I don't have a problem with people running quick times or people front running, but it's when no one tries to make any moves in and around it, and we got those moves. So many moves were made, and so made it such an exciting set of finals to watch.
I think you summarized that really well. Completely agree. What it was good, you know, despite, I guess, world indoors, you know, being that different time zone, being at, I guess, awkward times to watch, and just coming a little bit under the radar, the races were fantastic. You know, I think Brits performed. Mate, I guess we haven't touched on, you know, obviously Reve getting knocked out in the heat. And touch on that, and Adam Fogg as well.
Adam Fogg as well, yeah.
So those two kind of having a disappointed champs. I mean, just on Fogg though, I just look, you know, I don't know how, I'm only going off kind of what I see and stuff, how he trains, but you know, clearly there's quite a lot of double threshold. Clearly has some insane times in him, and Koskinen, you know, for me, I think kind of seconds is like how fast he was running indoors, you know, 7:30 over 3000, but there's just levels to this game, and you've got to be out of race, you know, and I think you can run all the good times in the world, you know, you can be a sub 350 miler, but if you can't close, if you can't compete, if you can't make moves in a race, if you can't, you know, have those, you know, the odd 200 go fast just to kind of get yourself in a good position and respond and react, you're going to get spat out the back door. And that's what happened to Fogg. And you're looking at it and you're like, I think something needs to change for that guy. I think he really needs to prioritize racing.
He's really so tough does. As well, because again, I also
at British
think
indoors, he hasn't. Yeah, you know, he hasn't delivered at British indoors.
Yeah, and that's where it's just like,
and that's a race of his level.
Yeah, and almost like was selection for the world indoors the worst thing for him? Like actually, maybe like getting a bit of a kickback and being like, "No, you're not going," might have been. Whereas now it's even worse. It's like I've gone again and not performed.
I think for his career, I actually think that the way it panned out well indoors is a good thing. I think surely he's looking at that going, hey, look, you know, I can be as fit as I want, but I got to be out of race. You know, I got to be out of race to 1500. And there's more to it than just being fit. There's more to it than being a low 330 guy.
Tough thing for these guys as well. Like you mentioned Koskinen as well. They'd have been in better shape when they opened up their seasons. And you see it time and time again.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
That's the point I'm making around like people like Fisher and stuff like that. He's prioritized a 3-week period where he's like, I'm going to be absolutely on it then. And he's done 3 high caliber races, 3 weeks on the bounce. If he then tried to hold it till today or a couple of days ago, obviously you plan it slightly differently, but it wouldn't be exactly the same, right? He wouldn't have been able to run those times. He wouldn't have that confidence. He'd have to save that period for now. And then you have a completely different race. And that's where, like you mentioned, Jakob, his ability to... People talk about his training, the way he's like super fit all year round. And they talk about the threshold work he does and the strength he has. But the way he prepares and gets himself ready for a championship is so undervalued. Like that period he has going into those is so like overlooked, because everyone else is like, oh yeah, we'll just do this threshold work the same as him, because they can crank it out all year round. Absolutely fine. But he's always there or thereabouts when it comes to it. But he's supreme at getting himself ready for those races. And I think that's it as well. It's not just like learning to race, but they're not even trying to race because they're so busy worrying about running a quick time a month ago or 6 weeks ago now.
Yeah, I agree. They're probably not nailing the build up. They're not looking for those. And the hard thing is where do you learn how to race now? Like doesn't exist. Like you can't go into, and this is why, you know, when we speak to Carl Merber, this is why I think Grand Slam is actually going to be very, very useful for a lot of athletes, because actually those doing it are learning to race. Because if you look at the circuit now, if you're an elite athlete trying to qualify for the world champs, I don't know where you learn to race. If you haven't honed your craft, you know, you're someone like Gawley, you know, spent a lot of time in the NCA before it got, you know, stupid. And, you know, he's someone who's always been naturally gifted when it comes to the racecraft. But yeah, I do look at someone like Adam Fogg. I'm like, where can he learn to race? Because every race he's going to go into, it's going to be a time trial. You know, you look at the European circuit, the world tours, their time trials, they're all set up, they're paced. Virtually every single one has got wave lights now. BMCs are all wave lights. You can't learn to race at a BMC. Even, you know, Fogg is way above that level anyway now. But, you know, the only chance you have to learn is at these championships and at the British Championships. So I think it is a good thing that he went and that happened. But it is difficult for athletes now because, you know, some people just have it and some don't. But you can't really develop it these days.
Yeah, I just don't. It can't be an excuse, can it? It can't be like, well, I just don't have it. I'm not a racer. I don't have
it. No, you've got to figure it out. Yeah, defo.
So I think like, yeah, if you asked Gawley, I don't think Gawley would be like, oh, I just have always had it. Like he'd probably cite a lot of the race he had growing up. Like you said, the NCAAs, things like that. Yeah, there's always things you can do though, isn't there? Because you can go get yourself in races and run it in a certain way. You don't have to just do what
I agree. Yeah.
Everyone else is doing. If you really value your career and you really want to win medals, then just because there's a really like, just because there's a like a really good opportunity for you to go and run quick doesn't mean you have to go there and run quick. You put yourself in the B race at Boston, right? And you could make a move like halfway and try and go 2K on your own in a 5K, for example. Like you can do that. Like these athletes, they have the agency to do that. They're like the wave lights are there. They're not fucking tied to the wave lights. Like, so there are things they can do. And I think it's just, yeah, it's excuses on their part if that's what they would say, you know.
I agree. But the problem is the standards are just getting so aggressive.
Yeah, and I do think that's the problem.
It takes like, you know, to go run these standards, you need 3 or 4 races to get, yeah, like...
And ranking points as well, again.
And obviously...
Value times and... Like I say, Grand Slam, couple weeks...
Yeah, I just think how much the rankings even mean. You know, you look at the world indoors, I mean, Jesus, that women's 400 was embarrassing. 12. Obviously, Anne Browning wins it, so fair play. But I mean, have 3 people in the heat? I was like, what are we watching? World indoors. Like, is this a Southern Athletics League or?
Hey, the Southern's normally full. It's like a YDF.
So, yeah, it's a hot contest, that 400. All those 8 runners doubling back. But yeah, yeah. And so you just look at the rankings, you're like, and anyway, like British Athletics don't take the rankings that seriously. They're still very much on the fence where they want to like commit to like going off it. Because at the end of the day, I think, you know, British Athletics will just take the fastest person no matter where your ranking is. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, that was World Indoors. Good meet. And I mean, that indoors finishes and hey, look, Grand Slam, 2 weeks time. And then that's it. You know, outdoors, we've got Diamond League. As well, which starts in a week or two. I think it might be the same weekend of Grand Slam. In my dates, right? So that's it now. It's outdoors. It's like crazy. But, you know, I suspect a few of these Ethiopians that we've seen will stay out there and run the Diamond Leagues as well. But mate, there was a, you know, Road 10K today. Obviously, British trial for the European Roadrunner Champs, which is 12th and 13th of April.
Yeah, it was. And speaking of people, I guess, neglecting a race, a few athletes just not really deciding to compete, I think, despite it being a trial. Like, there's six spots on the line, 4 automatic spots, 2 discretionary spots. On the men's side anyway, the guys we saw competing outside those standards, which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah, I mean, I understand it. You know, it is... I don't know when it didn't get announced that early anyway. Like this was definitely not something which is, I think it, did it get announced? Pretty sure as soon as Trafford got cancelled, Wolford stepped in. And then that's when they said, oh, we're going to hold the British Roadrunner Champs, the British Roadrunner Trial at it. So I don't think, you know, I mean, yeah, you're alluding to like, you know, the likes of Rory Leonard, you know, being way up at altitude. I've heard that, you know, he's interested in running the European Roadrunner Champs. He's obviously doing Sound 10 and to do that as well. And then you're looking at trying to go race, you know, the 10,000, the British 10,000 at Birmingham on the track. There's going to be a lot of 10s, you know, that could be a bit risky. So whether he does the European Roadrunner Champs, we'll see. But again, he might look at it as a good opportunity for him to try and, I mean, depending on who does it, he might be able to try and medal.
Yeah. No, it's for me, I'm not kind of, it's not really against the athletes. I just think, what's the point in putting on a trial if then athletes don't need to go? I just don't have it as a trial race. It seems a bit, just say, are we going to pick a team based off current form?
It fast, I suppose. I mean, it is funny. Let's give a bit of context. So the standard was what, 28-20? And we've got 10 guys, 9 guys who have run 28-20 or quicker. Liz Cross is one, ran it in Valencia. Obviously, Johnny Meller didn't run it in Valencia, ran it in the Netherlands in early February. But then Mark Scott, 28-12, Valencia, he won't go to this road running champs. Alfie Manthorpe, 28-12, he obviously raced, came, where did he come today? 3rd. So he'll probably go. Zach Mohammed, 2011, will he go? I mean, he's got Phil Sesman, Alex Yee, they're probably not going to go or not going to want to do it. And you got obviously Charlie Wheeler and Rory Leonard, who you think are going to be top picks. So I think British Athletics will just go down the list because unfortunately, Logan Rees, who won today, he only ran 28-30 at Valencia, but me and you were just discussing, you know, off air, 28-38, Frank ran the whole thing today. That's worth way more than a 28-30 in Valencia. So he's unlucky. He's unlucky not to go, but yeah, they do say they want to take 6, but yeah, he won't go.
Yeah. That's it. And if you throw a few more of those guys in, maybe he runs the time today. I know it's not their job to help him out, but it'd have been
it would have dragged things along. Like I think he would have. Like, he did a very, very good job pulling that along. Scott Sterling as well, by the way, 28-44. Both of those kind of really ran away with it, and you know, straight from the gun, they were just off and had to kind of just push it. So yeah, they were unfortunate. But yeah, Manthorp third, Andy Hayes fourth, Andy Fife was a bit further down, Callum Johnson. But I think on the men's side, the depth wasn't there for it to be a fast day. But you compare it to like podium, how many of the guys ran fast at podium, you know, last week. The depth just wasn't there for us to have loads of guys crashing and breaking sub 30. But on the women's, on the other hand, so yeah. So by the way, that team gets announced what, this week, Tuesday, Wednesday, something like that.
Yeah, so we'll see. Hopefully they do try and fill it. But yeah, I don't think they can on that men's side anyway, just in terms of the standards and things. And people obviously prepping for London. Yeah, we expect to see 4 or 5 maybe selected for that.
Yeah, agreed. But on the women's, we had 4 go quicker than the standard on the race today. The standard was 32.20. Nesbitt, Anderson, Ockenden and Potter all go under 32.20. And so you're just like, well, there's your 4 straight away. It's very impressive. But I mean, Beth Potter, 31.18. Absolutely cooking. Very, very impressive.
Yes, but again, is she going to want to go? I mean, presumably you'd only do this if you want to go, but then I'm sure she's got triathlon meets coming up. And so,
well,
is it.
I don't know her schedule, to be honest, but it is tricky because, you know, you've got, and then on the sidelines, the discretionary spots, you've got Judd McColgan and Amy Eloise Neal, who, you know, Judd and Neal ran in Valencia and McColgan was in Dubai. So you've got those three. Will they want to go? I mean, I can't imagine McColgan's going with London on the horizon.
Only 2 of them are discretionary, right?
Yeah, so like, who would they choose out of those 2? I think it'd be easy. McColgan just probably wouldn't go. I mean, it's 2 weeks before London, isn't it? So
yeah.
Other than Neil. So yeah, women's team is very, very strong. And just at the rate, you know, like I say, 4 inside that time. Amelia Quirk was 32.28, just outside. Hannah Rowan, 32.30. Alex Bell, 32.48. So her kind of road campaign's really starting to get moving. Haggett Kearney was 32.52. Meg Gatsby, so, you know, 32.26. Yeah, top sort of 5 and 6 in the women's race, very, very strong.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously, yeah, strong team to send to the Europeans, however many they send. And I think, yeah, just backing up their policy, really. Or we're expecting them to back up the policy of taking as many athletes as possible and giving people opportunities.
It's going to be self-funded, right? So I'm intrigued to see how much it is as well. Because it said it'd be no more than £1,100. So I'm intrigued to see where it comes in at. We'll have to try and find out from someone who gets selected, because I think they'll only tell you once you've been selected, apparently. But yeah, so the first self-funded trip. So you think it's good that they are being generous with who, you know, they want to take full teams as well, which is good.
Well, there's no reason. Especially no...
Right, that's what I mean. There's no reason not to. Yeah. Exactly. So, mate, that was the 2 big ones, really. Obviously, lots of half marathons and stuff when, you know, up and down the country. But yeah, we're looking forward to, we caught up with Carl Mober, so that will come out next week. And we're looking forward to Grand Slam and seeing how it all pans out. So, yeah, stay tuned and get ready for a big summer on the track.
Yeah, thanks for listening, guys. We'll catch you very, very soon.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have Leaf Filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A Leaf Filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install Leaf Filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, Leaf Filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. 1 discount per household. You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh.
run. Are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have Leaf Filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A Leaf Filter Trusted Pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install Leaf Filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, Leaf Filter Trusted Pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.